It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it's foggy and misty, 36 degrees, on its way to a predicted high of 41. And they are calling for rain likely today, mainly after 3 p.m. And that rain's expected to continue until midnight, and then showers after that. Southeast winds to 15 are expected to continue overnight, come up to 20 tonight. For tomorrow, a chance of snow showers before 9 a.m., then a chance of snow, mainly between 9 a.m. and noon. That will turn to partly sunny skies tomorrow afternoon with a high near 42, southeast winds to about 5. And for Wednesday night, chance of snow before midnight, turning to rain and snow between midnight and 3, then just plain snow after that. That should be interesting. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Island Borough is still experiencing increased COVID cases. The Southeast and the Panhandle are an icy mess.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden's back in Atlanta this hour to make the case for federal voting rights legislation that counters voting restrictions passed in Georgia and other GOP-led states. But as NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports, some civil rights leaders argue Biden ought to be waging a stronger battle in defense of minority voters back in Washington.
Activists have been saying for months that what they want is concrete action. They don't want another speech. They want real change. And some have even gone as far to say, you know, we don't necessarily need Biden to come to Georgia. We want him to stay in D.C. because that's where the issue is. Now, there are some activists who want him to take the show on the road and go to various states and make the case. But there are some that are saying, look, D.C. is where the problem is.
NPR's Aisha Roscoe reporting. Well, days after the country observed the anniversary of the pro-Trump attack on the U.S. Capitol, the Department of Justice has announced plans to form a specialized unit to focus on domestic terrorism. Assistant Attorney General Matthew Olson told the Senate Judiciary Committee that the DOJ is responding to an elevated threat from violent extremists. 20 years ago today, individuals rounded up after the September 11th terror attack started arriving at the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. A new report tallies how much U.S. taxpayers have spent since then to fight terrorism. Here's NPR's Sasha Pfeiffer.
The total bill for the war on terror, launched 2 decades ago, is about $5.5 trillion. That includes more than $500 million a year to operate Guantanamo's prison, which now holds just 39 men. The expense also includes military activities overseas, from counterterrorism training to airstrikes. Letta Taylor of Human Rights Watch co-authored the report on the spending, which includes a series of recommendations.
First and foremost, President Biden should do what none of his predecessors since 9/11 have done, and that is close Guantanamo, which is a blight on the U.S. reputation and moral authority worldwide.
Most Guantanamo prisoners have never been charged. Sasha Pfeiffer, NPR News.
Under a cloud of secrecy, the head of Denmark's foreign intelligence unit is being detained. A court only recently revealed that the official has been in prison for weeks for allegedly violating Denmark's privacy laws. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports Danish intelligence officials are accused of colluding with the U.S. National Security Agency to spy on Danish citizens.
Denmark's foreign intelligence chief Lars Findsen has been in custody for the past month following allegations he is involved in the leak of highly classified information. The news of his arrest was only made public yesterday, and no details of the charges have been released by the prosecution, but it follows allegations from 2020 about Danish intelligence sharing citizens' personal data and private communications with the U.S. National Security Agency.
That's NPR's Rob Schmitz. It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Operations Center has reported 235 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough since Friday. There are 544 cases currently classified as active locally, and there's one active case currently hospitalized in Kodiak. To date, in the Kodiak Island Borough, there have been 3,440 cases, 92 local hospitalizations, and 9 deaths associated with COVID-19. As record case numbers continue to be reported in Kodiak, it's becoming more apparent that Kodiak is in the throes of its largest ever wave of COVID. According to Amy Quarter, incident commander for the COVID response of the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center, COVID is going to be spreading quickly for the next few weeks.
We are cautiously hopeful that by the end of this month, we will be seeing the tip of the peak and hopefully be coming down. But I think it's still too soon to say that because throughout the country, I haven't seen anywhere coming down. And if you look at the British models, they're still staying up pretty high. So they haven't had quite as fast of a fall as we anticipated.
Quarter says local hospitalizations are also expected to rise accordingly. With more vaccinated healthcare workers testing positive, she says that the strain on the local and state hospital systems will be intense. Just last week, the Kodiak Medical Center announced that visitations would become more limited, and outpatient services may have more limited availability based on staffing.
The Omicron seems like it is transmitting faster. So instead of 5 days after exposure where you start showing symptoms, people are usually 2 or 3 days after exposure starting to show symptoms. So you see those spikes come a lot faster because people are testing sooner, but it's also much more transmissible. So more people are getting it.
In addition to wearing masks indoors, Quarter says it's time to consider shrinking social circles to avoid spreading COVID-19. Did you feel a jolt last night? At about 8:25 p.m., a magnitude 4.6 earthquake hit the northernmost end of Shuyak Island. The quake was at a depth of 7.3 miles and about 50 miles away from the city of Kodiak. 4 hours later, a magnitude 6.8 quake occurred along the Aleutian Chain, 44 miles east southeast of Nikolsky, at a depth of 13.8 miles. The recent quakes do not appear to be part of a trend. According to the United States Geological Survey, this is entirely typical earthquake activity for this region of Alaska. Schools, businesses, and government offices across the southern panhandle were closed yesterday after a combination of snow and rain made travel difficult. KRBD's Eric Stone has more.
Ketchikan residents reported parked cars spontaneously sliding down hills as heavy rains turned snow into ice. O.C. Knowlton says his car slid 4 or 5 feet down his sloped driveway overnight.
I walked down to the end of the garage, and I saw my car was halfway out into Lincoln Street, almost completely blocking the road. And I thought, what on earth, you know, that there's just no way that it slid all the way down there.
He said he wasn't going into work because his office was flooded. And he wasn't the only one who woke up with his car not quite where he left it.
My husband yesterday went outside to, you know, clear some drains and noticed that his car had slid back, I don't know, like 3-4 feet.
That's Donna Boss. She lives nearby. She says the Power Wagon's parking brake didn't help.
If it's icy or rainy, I usually put on my emergency brake because I thought, like, it could possibly happen, but I didn't think it actually did happen. And then I noticed, too, my neighbor, whose driveway is even less steep than mine, his car had slid yesterday also, so it was pretty insane.
The slippery conditions came after more than 2.5 inches of rain fell on top of unusually heavy snow, Kimberly Vaughn of the National Weather Service told KRBD during a morning interview.
And unfortunately, now the hazards change from snow accumulation to just what the snow does when it reacts with the rain that we're now getting, which is to turn it to ice.
The wet weather wrought havoc all over the region. In Ketchikan, school officials canceled class on Monday due to treacherous, icy conditions on roads and school grounds. City and borough offices were also closed, and some businesses said they were closing up shop as well. State offices, including Ketchikan's public health clinic, followed suit. Roads in town were relatively clear by Monday afternoon, though some ice remained on many sidewalks and driveways. On Prince of Wales Island, the State Department of Transportation urged residents to stay home as crews worked to clear and sand roads. Standing water had been reported between Thorn Bay and Kasan, but the Department of Transportation said in a statement that crews with the organized village of Kasan had been able to clear outlets and drain the flooded roadway. Classes at the Thorn Bay School were canceled Monday. Officials in the Prince of Wales Island community of Klawock urged residents to conserve water for at least 24 hours after leaks and blockages drained much of the community's drinking water supply. But the community's school held in-person classes, and the airport is ice-free and operational. Roads in Klawock and the nearby community of Craig were in pretty good shape, according to state transportation officials, and classes in Craig are virtual this week because of an uptick in coronavirus cases. Metlakatla's Walden Point Road, which connects the town with the community's ferry terminal, was closed Monday morning, according to local police. It reopened later that afternoon. A Monday morning ferry run to Ketchikan was canceled. Annette Island School District classes are also in distance learning this week because of COVID-19. Relief from the icy mess is in store for Ketchikan and the Southern Panhandle, says the Weather Service's Kimberly Vaughn.
You're seeing high temperatures during the day getting into the 40s. So that should help with that melting of the snow and ice over this next week, because we have no temperatures below freezing forecasted for the next week.
In the meantime, it's a good idea to wear some ice cleats when venturing outdoors. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The State Department of Transportation plans to build 16 passing lanes next year on the Richardson Highway between Fairbanks and Delta Junction to reduce traffic backups and improve safety. DOT proposed the project mainly in response to Kinross Gold's plans to haul nearly 200 truckloads of ore every day from its mine near Tok to its mill north of Fairbanks. Many of those who live along that 250-mile route say they're alarmed at such a big increase in truck traffic, and they're urging Kinross to consider the alternatives. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
DOT Northern Region Engineer Carl Heim says the agency has for years been looking at building passing lanes in 8 areas between Delta and Eielson Air Force Base, but he says the proposal was divided up to make each project more affordable.
Sort of scaled it down to maybe 1 or 2 passing lane locations, something that's a little bit more fundable, and got it around to like $3 to $5 million. But that was last year.
Since then, Kinross Gold officials have announced they won't build a mill at their Manh Choh mine near Tentland, and they say they'll instead haul the ore by truck from there to the Fort Knox mill north of Fairbanks, up to 190 truckloads a day.
So there was a lot of interest in getting these passing lanes going again.
Heim says there's long been a need for more passing lanes on the Richardson because it already carries a lot of traffic, including tanker trucks hauling fuel and slow-moving army convoys, and during summer and hunting seasons, RVs with boats and four-wheelers in tow. And now the Kinross trucking plan that'll kick into gear soon after the mine begins operations in 2024.
So we're kind of a little bit on a fast-track delivery project, but we're looking at trying to get the whole design done by the end of this year and having it be in construction in the beginning of 23.
It would be hard to find anybody who'd oppose the idea of building more passing lanes on Alaska's 2-lane highways, but many area residents think that's a Band-Aid cure at best.
Passing lanes are a good idea, but they're really a red herring.
Gary Wilkin is a longtime resident of Fairbanks who heads up a group called Advocates for Safe Alaska Highways.
We're talking about 192 trucks a day, and these are trucks that are up to 120 feet long and weigh somewhere around 75 tons loaded.
Wilkin is a former state senator and ex-board member of the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, or ADA, who now sits on the board of the Fairbanks-based Interior Gas Utility. He says the safety advocacy group includes people from several communities along the route, which includes portions of the Alaska, Richardson, and Stees highways. And he says they want to convince Kinross officials to consider an alternative to their trucking plan.
This is a generational decision that we're involved in, whether we want to allow our highways to become their haul roads.
Wilkins says his group is supporting three alternatives. The first is to build an on-site mill at the Manh Choh mine. Company officials have already ruled that out because they say it would increase the mine's environmental impact and undercut the venture's profits. The group's second alternative calls for Kinross to build a rail line along the route or portion of it. And the third alternative would be for Kinross to build a frontier road, like the one Ada's building for the Ambler Mining District in northwest Alaska.
Ada builds you a road and you pay for it over the life of your investment.
Wilkins says members of the group hope to talk with Kinross officials soon about their proposals. They may get a chance to do that next week when the company will hold two meetings about the project, one in Fairbanks and the other in Tok. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
As the Omicron variant pushes case counts higher around the state, Russian Orthodox parishioners in Bristol Bay shifted their celebrations of Orthodox Christmas for the second year in a row. KDLG's Izzy Ross attended the Christmas service and has this report.
The horizon glows deep orange under a cloudless, dark sky along Nishigak Bay. It's Christmas morning in the Russian Orthodox tradition. Several people sing inside St. Seraphim of Sarov Orthodox Church. It's the start of Slavi, and it's the second year the parishioners are celebrating in a pandemic. That means they will have to celebrate an important part of the holiday differently. As the service continues, more people arrive. Some take disposable masks available at the church entrance. Two men move to the front of the room, holding tinsel stars with pictures of saints in the middle. They start to spin the stars, and Slavi begins. Starring symbolizes the birth of Christ and ushers in the new year. Normally, carolers twirl bright tinsel stars in households around their community. Some travel to other villages as well.
Slavi this year is a little different compared to last year. If we do go slaving, people need to give us a call, you know, invite us to their house.
Subdeacon John Castile speaks at the front of the church. During Slavi, people usually go from house to house to sing, visit, eat, and rest. This year, they used social media to announce the changes and ask people to call if they want Slavi carolers to visit. If the carolers do Slavi at someone's house, they'll ask the host how many people can enter.
We're going to sing and then leave right away. We won't hug anybody. We won't kiss anybody. It's all right for them to give us a donation. It's all right for them to give us a goodie bag if they want to.
Slavi is a Russian Orthodox tradition in what's now Ukraine, but it has a long history in communities around the state, including Bristol Bay. Carols here are sung in Yupik and English as well as Slavonic, an archaic Russian dialect used by the Orthodox Church. Marilyn Castile's family has practiced Slavi for generations.
My grandpa was John Nelson. He was the chief of the church, and he ingrained a lot of Christmas spirit into us, that we should go sing and make grace that Christ is born, and to open our homes to all the Slaviers.
Last year, they didn't Slavi in person, and she says this year, local public health officials discouraged doing so. That's difficult.
After church, we're used to hugging and kissing and carrying on. But, you know, over the past 2 years, none of that's been happening. Mm-hmm. You know, we lost a lot of our elders over the last 2 years. And that's what makes it emotional, too. Mm-hmm. We love our elders. And, you know, at this point, I think all we could do is say Plasniku from the St. Seraphim of Sarov in Dillingham, Alaska.
This year, Castile says they're trying to find ways to celebrate safely. They'll still bring the star to people who ask for it, but they'll limit the number of carolers who enter each house. And they're hoping to stream carols on Facebook Live for people who can't receive the star this year.
I feel like it's, you know, really hard. It's pretty emotional because it's not normal.
Lorray Anguson says she always enjoys this time of year. She says gathering is important, even if it's from a distance.
I think when everybody gathers together, it's just like, it feels, you know, like home. It feels like family. And it's really good to see a lot of faces and And just like I said, it's pretty emotional to keep our distance from everybody.
Angusson and others will slavi until January 13th, when they will celebrate New Year's with a bonfire in Aleknagik. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
We all have thought it before, that little voice telling us to leave, pack up our online presence and move off the grid. Life would be much better without the daily pressures of online life, right? Some would prefer to go completely off the grid and delete everything. No social media, no blog subscription, zero internet access. What if there was a way to enjoy the pleasures of online life, but with no one noticing? What if you could go off the grid, but stay on the grid? Can you have the best of both worlds? Well, let's find out. In today's society, the most popular item on the grid is the internet. Living 100% off the grid consists of the following items. Zero internet access. No cell phones, except prepaid. No credit cards or debit cards. Change your entire appearance. Provide energy, water, heat, etc. on your own. And don't rely on one or more public utilities. Some might say that this is harsh and sounds like a spy movie. Others might think that this is a fantasy, to live on a private island and disconnect from the world entirely, living in a witness protection program. Though, this is a viable option for some people wishing to live off the grid entirely, as long as you are not doing anything illegal, like not paying taxes to the government. You can shut off the internet and never go back. On the other hand, there are some negatives to living this anonymous lifestyle. Most anonymous tools cost a lot of money. And even if you have the best intentions and protect yourself with every known tool in the world, you're still likely to be found out. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 11th day of January, the year 2022, which makes it 1-11-22. The sun rose today at 9:45. It will set again at 4:49. That will give us 7 hours and 4 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 53 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 50 degrees set in 2012, and a record low was minus 1 set in 1932. Currently 34 degrees out at the airport, with calm winds. They're calling for rain this afternoon, mainly after 4. Cloudy skies, high near 41, south winds to 15. Rain is likely tonight. Now they're saying until 1 a.m., then showers after that. Cloudy skies tonight with southeast wind to 20. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain before 7 a.m., then a chance of snow. That'll turn to partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 42 and southeast winds continuing at 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 4:01 this afternoon. That will be a 1.8-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:12 p.m. of 5.2 feet. Our low tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:56 a.m. and be 3.4 feet, and our high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 9:37 a.m. and be 8.1 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 4:24 this afternoon. That will be a 2.8-foot tide in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a high tide at 10:20 p.m. of 9 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 3:52 a.m. and be 5.3 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:04 a.m. and be 12.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. with south winds to 20 today, seas to 11 feet. Southeast 25 tonight, seas to 11 feet. And for tomorrow, south winds to 20, seas to 10 feet. Wednesday night, east wind to 35 knots, seas coming up to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof, variable 15 early today, becoming northeast 20 this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, east 20, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, south winds to 15 knots, seas to 4 feet, are expected to come down to 2 feet tomorrow afternoon. But mariners be aware, on Wednesday night in the Shelikof, northeast 35, seas coming back up to 11 feet on Wednesday night. For Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, south 15 today, seas building to 4 feet this afternoon. Southeast 20 tonight, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, south 20 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow night in Chiniac Bay, east wind to 25 knots, seas to 10 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, southeast 15 today and seas to 4 feet. Southeast 20 tonight, seas to 7 feet. Variable less than 10 tomorrow in Marmot Bay, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow night, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 10 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow night. The Kodiak Public Library will be closed to the public through January 31st due to staff shortages and active COVID-19 cases in the community. Curbside service is still available for borrowing of materials and drop-off copying services. Please reserve materials through their online catalog. You can find that at the City of Kodiak Library website. Or you can call 486-8686 for service. Call them Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. International Guitar Night is tomorrow. That's at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Four guitar luminaries will be showcasing the diversity of their instrument. Again, that's happening 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium tomorrow. For more information and to get tickets, go to the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's at www.kodiakarts.org. Kodiak History Museum, Kodiak Arts Council, and the City of Kodiak are inviting artists to submit qualifications to design an outdoor public art installation in downtown Kodiak. It's part of the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative. The artwork will be located in an area near the ferry terminal parking lot, including nearby crosswalks and sidewalks. It will connect the terminal and visitor center with the museum district. The primary goal for the project is to revitalize an underutilized public space and create a pedestrian plaza for visitors and locals alike to enjoy. The artist's submission deadline is January 21st. Complete details of the project and the artist submissions process can be found online at the Arts Council website. That's at www.kodiakarts.org. Also, you artists, it's time to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation 2022 Individual Artist Award. Competitive grant awards for Alaskan artists include 25 project awards at $7,500 each and 10 fellowships at $18,000 each. It's for emerging, mid-career, and mature artists. Your deadline is Tuesday, March 1st for online applications. Paper applications must be delivered or postmarked by February 14th. To apply, you need to go online at rasmussen.org. That's R-A-S-M-U-S-O-N, no doubled up letters in Rasmussen. If you need additional assistance, email arts@rasmussen.org, or you can call the foundation at 297-2700 to have the application mailed to you. They're also having a workshop on how to apply. That's going on Wednesday, January 19th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., and it's co-hosted by the Kodiak Arts Council. To register, go to the rasmussen.org website, and again, that's R-A-S-M-U-S-O-N. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary will be meeting virtually on Saturday, January 15th, beginning at 10 a.m. Just email Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary, that's all one word, at gmail.com, for a Zoom connection. New members are always welcome.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.